1977, George Lucas formed a legacy.
The Force is with me, and I am with the Force.
Inspired by mythology, his saga has become a passion for many.
You must feel the Force around you.
His legend has become our story.
It's true. All are.
One of resistance.
We are the spark that will light the fire that will bring the First Order down.
Rebellion.
Rebellion is built on hope.
And redemption.
I am a Jedi, like my father before.
This is Star Wars Reactions.
Remember, the Force will be with you, always.
Well, hello, and Carabast. Welcome to Star Wars Reactions, everybody. This is a great way to kick off an episode, isn't it? Woo-wee. Let me go ahead and put my hat on now. Welcome to Star Wars Reactions, everybody. You know, I could re-record this, but why would I? It's a Carabast moment. My name is Aaron Harris, of course. Who else makes all those big Carabast moments? Welcome to Star Wars Reactions. We got a great show for you. Let me bring my co-host in to rescue me. Oh, rescue me, rescue me. David Motters. David, brother, what's going on?
Oh, man. Hey, you know, I was trying to think as you did that. I don't know if that beats the previous record of Erwin's Carabast. I get that. That was just right at the
hello.
You know? Yeah. Is that a new record?
That's the record.
Okay. All right.
That one will be hard to beat, but there's going to be a way. Trust me, I will find it.
Well, hey, I'm here to rescue you, buddy. As always, ready to react. I've been so excited to cover these episodes of Obi-Wan Kenobi with Aaron and you know, for our listeners, and hopefully they enjoy it. And my excitement level has stayed high. It hasn't trailed off, and just ready to record, ready to react. I have a lot to discuss.
We do, and it's going to be a great, great show, and we're not going to hold back. We're just going to go ahead and jump in it. This week, we're discussing the fourth part of the Obi-Wan Kenobi series. This episode was entitled Part 4. I had to do that. That's not my dad joke for the week either, guys. Just hold on. There's more to come. This was released on June 8th, 2022, written by Joby Harold and Hannah Friedman, and of course directed by the ever-talented Deborah Chow. In Part 4, we see Ben infiltrating the Inquisitor's base in search of Leia, with the help of his newfound friend Tala. There he discovers that this base of operations serves not only as the Inquisitor's headquarters, but it is a mausoleum where the dead Jedi are kept. Meanwhile, Reva uses all of her abilities to interrogate Leia, from being her friend to, you know, trying to intimidate her, to using the Force, to torture, and everything in between. And while that's going on, Tala runs some interference for Ben, which gets Reva away from Leia so Ben can rescue her. And they make their escape with the help of some operatives from the Jedi underground movement called The Path, who they met on Jabrin. Vader arrives not long after, furious that Reva let them escape, but she reveals that it was all part of her plan and that they have planted a tracker on that ship. And that tracker is revealed to be Leia's little droid, Lola. Bum, bum, bum.
Oh. I had to do it with you. I knew it was coming.
Yes. I think that was the maddest I got during that episode, too. I was like, are you kidding me?
Oh, yeah.
So
that hurt, man.
Yeah, that was a shot through the heart. So right there, man, that was rough. So let's get into our those initial reactions. We both know we didn't like Lola, but what else were your in Carabast? We're having a great night, Dave.
This might be not only the record for the quickest Carabas, but the most Carabas.
Holy snotteroni. All right. Wow. All right. David, kick us off with more of your initial thoughts.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. You know, the first thing I wrote down, consistent with last week, but slightly different, as I said, are they still trying to give me a heart attack? I was thinking Deborah Chow wants there to be more Star Wars fans, more people watching. I think she's going to have less because we're going to die of heart attacks. And this is another one where she just builds up tension throughout this episode. And the way that the actress who plays Tala presents her face and breaths of relief as she gets through into where she needs to do in Fortress Inquisitorius. Obviously, you know, Obi-Wan, you know, Ewan McGregor trying to avoid seeker droids, then stormtroopers and hiding and moving. Oh my gosh. And then Leia being interrogated and then being put in a torture chair. No, my heart is fine. I have no cardiac issues whatsoever. But, you know, I'm really doing the suspension of disbelief and just really getting into it and enjoying new Star Wars. So again, after part three last week, I thought I might get a bit of a break, but no. But that's fine. I enjoyed the suspense. I loved Obi-Wan's slow but sure reconnection to the Force. Stormtroopers, there's nothing like working out the rust or working out the kinks by deflecting Stormtrooper shots and roughing them up. I love that. Totally enjoy that. And I absolutely continue to enjoy, Vivian Blair, right? Vivian Lyra Blair or something like that. But love her as Leia. And really her building this solid foundation for what Leia becomes in later movies, really her characterization, it's very well done and it fits and I can see it flowing into Leia in Rogue One and Episode Four and on. So just really, really enjoying it. And so much more to talk about that I enjoyed and the escape and all that. But I'll stop right there and just let you jump in with what, you know, your initial reaction was.
Perfect. Excellent. Excellent. You know, it was an awesome episode for me. You know, it's to me, it felt like it was a bit slower paced than the previous three episodes, but it was packed full of some incredible things, incredible awesomeness. Seeing Ben kind of sneak around the Inquisitor's facility kind of reminded me a lot of Ezra and Kanan doing that in a couple episodes, and just a lot of fun there. Seeing some of the nods with the Purge Troopers coming in, and of course the snow speeders. That was just sweet. It was awesome. You know, I get into it a little bit later, but I did have a little bit of an issue with Kenobi just, you know, flipping a switch and all of a sudden becoming Super Force guy after getting his butt kicked by Vader. But all things considered, you know, it was an incredible episode. It was still great. I've loved every episode of this show, and I still can't wait for more. So,
yeah.
So let's go ahead and jump into some of our talking points here. The first thing, David, you added to our notes, and we'll go ahead and kick off with that, which just goes right along with what I just said, is Ben reconnecting to the Force. Kenobi finding his how Kenobi got his groove back. When it comes to Force, because we see him last episode fighting Vader and looking like he kind of looked like Finn in episode 7, just kind of waving his saber around, not knowing what he was doing with it. And that's pretty much how Ben looked and Kenobi looked in this episode, whereas this episode, which is just not very long after in the timeline, he's deflecting shots, he's found his groove, he's got his stance, he's, you know, spinning his saber around and posing. It's just, you know, like a different person. And like I said in my opening notes, kind of had an issue with that because it all just seemed to conveniently happened too fast, in my opinion. Let's talk about it, because we see him. He gets this impassioned speech from Tala on their way to the Inquisitor's home base. And she basically tells him, you know, for Leia's sake, he's got to forget his past and walk away from the bad memories and forget the past. And he's like, some things just can't be forgotten. And she's like, for Leia's sake, it needs to be. And that's kind of where it's left. And next, you know, he's spinning lightsabers and he's, you know, force throwing stuff to distract the stormtroopers. And he goes all super ninja Jedi in the torture chamber. So yeah, it doesn't, I don't feel like it should have come back that quickly. You know, I guess the adage of riding a bike could apply, but I mean, what are your thoughts on how he reconnected, David?
Yeah, I wonder, buddy, if it's a function of, and of course, this is outside of the episode and outside the Star Wars universe, if it's a function of having just six episodes and, you know, he's got to get it back so that, you know, the next fight, all of us are anticipating another throwdown with Vader, that he is able to really hold his own and again lead into that episode four comment by Vader. You know, last time that we met, I was but the learner, now I'm the master. And again, 10 years into this, since episode three, he is a learner. He's becoming more powerful and so on. I liked it. It's kind of like, that's why I mentioned in my initial reactions that it makes more sense to me that he looks better going against stormtroopers. You know, we've always talked about them, just the, you know, just the cannon fodder of Star Wars. You know, I mean, it's just, if he was going up against someone more powerful, you know, even I would think Reva, or even at the Grand Inquisitor, if we see him again, I'm not sure, but I think we'd see much more of a struggle. But I think it's a perfect way to build up, you know, from, like you said, the beatdown that he had in the last episode, or part three, I guess they're calling them parts. But, you know, Aaron, just real quickly, give a little brief mini psychology corner here. I don't have one at the end, but let me just kind of still give our listeners some psychology. Like, I want to piggyback off what you said when Tala is talking to him as they're approaching the fortress. And she talks about, you know, forgetting that because of how much it can, you know, for her, for him, all of them made mistakes, how much it can cloud our decisions and our performance. Doing a lot of different things, let alone trying to wield a lightsaber and not cut your leg off and et cetera. But I've referenced this before in previous psychology corners, but there is a book called The Body Keeps Score. The Body Keeps the Score by Dr. Bessel van der Kolk. He's an MD, he's a psychiatrist, and he has spent his entire career researching trauma, you know, of which is, you know, PTSD is a big part. I've heard a lot of people talking about Obi-Wan's PTSD. I've talked about PTSD in previous episodes. But here, what I would say is this, is that the challenge is not only for Obi-Wan to not think about that, which I think he's made an effort to do, but the body as well. And so from that standpoint, I would say that Dr. van der Kolk's research backs up what you're saying, Aaron, that that's a pretty big change pretty quickly, because the body keeps the score. Even if you try to push it out of your brain, your body doesn't forget anytime soon. So now, again, I'm bringing two different, you know, I'm bringing the real world into the Star Wars world. So I wanted to back you up there from a scientific perspective, from a psychological, psychiatric perspective on trauma, but also intersplice it with what Tala said, what Ben's experiencing and so on. But then ultimately, I go back to what I mentioned, that I think him progressing like this from the beginning of the episode, trying to move that little metal object to how he finished up, I think is a function of six episodes and of time and money.
Oh, definitely. That's probably the case. And I'm like, I like how you said that, because that was kind of along the lines how I was thinking with it being such a short time. You know, I'm dealing right now with my mom who was sick and hospitalized for, gosh, she was bedridden for a little over a month. And she's in rehab now trying, and she's pretty much having to learn how to walk all over again after just being bedridden a month. Kenobi hasn't used the Force or his lightsaber in 10 years.
Right.
They're saying it could take up to, you know, it could take my mom up to two, 3 months to be back to where she was before she got sick. And here in a matter of 45 minutes, we go from being drug through fire to spinning lightsabers. And it's just, again, that's where I think your statement with suspension of the disbelief has to come into play because of the short time frame that we're working with. But that was the main thing in this episode that really kind of pulled me out.
Right. Well, and let me piggyback, because you and I know from Star Wars Celebration, they not only talked about 12 episodes of Andor, but the producer was up on stage there with Diego Luna and Genevieve O'Reilly and the cast and all that. And they announced we're going to start production, or have already started production, on another 12 episodes. Yep. When I hear that, I'm sitting there saying, again, to back you up, okay, instead of 6 episodes, make this 8. We had 8 episodes of Mandalorian season 1, 8 episodes of season 2, 7 of Book of Boba Fett. Absolutely could, you know, this is Obi-Wan. Space it out, do 8 episodes, and we can have the development that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. But then at the same point, we also have to sit back and realize, too, this was also supposed to be a 2-hour movie.
Yeah, good point.
And they've expanded it into 6 45-minute to an hour episodes.
Very good point.
So essentially we're getting a trilogy instead of a single standalone movie. So it's one of those things where we've gotten more than what we was originally planned, but the amount of content they're squeezing into that to what we're getting could have expanded it out another 3 or 4 episodes.
Yes. Well said. Well said.
So, but yeah, I mean, I will admit he did look good spinning that lightsaber.
Oh, buddy. I love it. I love it.
when he went all stealth ninja on those 2 stormtroopers guarding Leia in the torture chamber. It was perfect. I mean, the lights go out, all you got is a glowing red from around the torture chair, and all of a sudden a blue lightsaber lights up in 3 slashes. 1 stormtrooper's gone and the saber's out,
right?
And you got the other stormtrooper with his blaster drawn, pointing it around in the air. He's not even pointing it level with somebody that would be next to him. He's pointing it up like somebody is standing on a balcony above him.
I love what you're saying too. I just watched the episode again, but for a second time before we got on, and he's like, what does he say? He's like, there's no escape.
Yeah.
He's shaking in his boots.
Yeah, drop your weapon, there's no escape. Seriously, dude, the lightsaber lights up behind him and slash, he's gone. But he really showed his stuff, starting there and moving into the hallway scene where he's literally fighting stormtroopers on both sides and the seeker droids and everything, as they're just kind of converging on his location. And he really started to show some of that Kenobi mojo. But one thing I do want to throw out there and get your opinion on too. Because we don't see him use his saber or use the Force in his old school style until after he enters the security area of the Inquisitor's base, where he finds basically the mausoleum of dead Jedi.
Yeah.
And I wonder, you know, if that had anything to do with him pulling back together and coming back to who he was before 66 and getting that mojo back and getting reconnected, seeing that, because I can see that going either way. You know, you walk into a room and there's hundreds of Jedi basically dead in stasis there, and you see people he knows, you see younglings, I mean that very first one we see is Tara Sanube.
Yes.
I mean, come on. I mean that's they got that program, it's 6 steps to get to Kevin Bacon, you know,
right.
6 steps to Ahsoka Tano. He did it in one. So, I mean, by finding Tara Sanube, I mean, it's, there he is. I could see it going either way with completely re-traumatizing him, but I can also see that being almost a motivation or a reconnection point of connecting to the Force at that point. Cause we see at the end of, let's go to Rise of Skywalker. At the end, Rey is laying there, and then you have all the Jedis of the past talking to her: Mace, Anakin, Kanan, Luke. They're all sitting there talking to her, encouraging her, and
what's that?
With the planet?
In this episode?
No. In Rise of Skywalker.
Oh, they're on Exegol there.
Exegol. Thank you. Exegol. I knew it started with an E, but I couldn't, it wasn't coming out of my mouth. They're in the heart of the Sith, and she reconnects to every Jedi that's gone before. Here, he is surrounded by all the Jedi that have gone before it. I wonder if their collective, because you remember in Rebels, they had the decomposing body of
Luminar Unduli.
Luminar Unduli that was calling to Kanan, and drew him in. And it was basically, you know, a remnant, a shadow of what it was. And if maybe the energy, the light energy from these dead Jedi almost served as like a jolt, shock him, jump like you're jumping your car off. It gives them that jolt of energy and reconnection to the Force that just kind of got him going.
I like it. I like what you're saying because, and again, yes, when you talked about re-traumatization, again, it can go one of two ways. You know, do you just shut down, right? Because a lot of times when we're traumatized or in a panic attack, we shut down, that fight or flight kind of thing. And so for him, I think it is, like you said, not a shutdown, but motivation to say no more. And then hearing Leia scream, I think that locks it in, right? And he's basically saying no more, no more of this. We're not going to lose any more people like this. And ultimately, your take, I think, really fits with what they have been setting up in previous episodes, where we see Ben trying to connect to Qui-Gon. And so I think you and I might have talked about this last episode of Star Wars Reactions, maybe the one before, but this movement towards that, and consistent with what you're saying, buddy,
yeah,
I could see Obi-Wan connecting with Qui-Gon and that really bringing him back into the form he needs to properly fight Vader.
Yeah.
So yes, I just kind of piggybacked off what you said, and I kind of anticipate that happening in the next two episodes.
Oh, absolutely. Because, I mean, he's definitely on his way to improving, but he's not where he would need to be to face Vader again.
Right.
So especially to give him that run that he would need to give him to survive. So it'd be interesting to see where that goes. So the other big thing that in this episode, that we put in our show notes that we want to talk about. And since we already brought up the mausoleum, we'll jump into this, is you brought up an interesting point. If by seeing all of this mausoleum of dead Jedi, now, of course, then they would have access to the DNA and everything there. If we're starting to see some of the groundwork laid for the ultimate, the final order, Palpatine. If this is what ends up bringing us into the Mandalorian with Pershing, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like they're really, you know, trying to do that. That's my take. I mean, because, you know, we saw the effort that JJ, you know, had to make. He obviously went to Disney, asked them for two movies. It wouldn't have been a trilogy. It would have been four movies with everything he wanted to do and try to rectify with Snoke, etc. You know, remember the joke everyone was talking about? Snoke and pickle jars at the beginning of The Rise of Skywalker on Exegol. You know, you and I were just talking about it. But I was just thinking about it, you know, again, the first time I watched this episode in part four, and then watching it again tonight before you and I jumped on, and just thinking, I'm like, here we are between episodes three and four. You know, is this, you know, the Emperor saying, yeah, let's keep these individuals here. Let's use their DNA. Let's try to reproduce bodies. Perhaps, you know, if something happens to me, I can put my force essence into this type of body that is more force sensitive or could contain my essence, you know, in it versus maybe a non-force person in the galaxy, right? And so then, of course, this is between three and four. We know Mandalorian is after episode six. We see Pershing doing that research and they're having trouble with maintaining these bodies, and then by episode nine, you know, we cut to, you know, Snoke in these pickle jars at the beginning as Kylo's on Exegol. You know, I was thinking back to when Aaron and I did an episode on the novelization of The Rise of Skywalker, and in it, it gives you some of the background on this process and really, you know, Palpatine's force essence leaving the body and traveling across, you know, the galaxy and stuff. We don't get that in the movie.
Yeah.
You know, and so I don't know. I would encourage people to take a look at that and see how the author dealt with that. But I wanted to throw it out there because, you know, that's what I thought about, you know. I guess at first, Aaron, I'm like, wait, are they dead? Are they just in stasis? Are they dead and in stasis, you know? So I think I lean towards like what you said. They are dead, but preserved in there for perhaps, you know, extraction of DNA to ultimately help, you know, the Emperor.
Absolutely. Then the question remains, that brings up a whole new slew of questions, is how many people knew of his plan? Did Vader know his plan? Did the Inquisitors? Did Reva? Because apparently she knows everybody's secrets.
Right.
So it's brings up a whole slew of additional questions if it is that connection. But I like that. It definitely does appear that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
So perfect. Well, we got more to talk about. We are going to take a brief break, but we'll be right back talking more of Kenobi Part 4. Welcome back, everybody. Aaron and David here. We are continuing continuing our discussions of God.
Some listeners keeping track of all these Carabas moments. You know that.
Yeah. Does this count as one or like three in a row?
Third. This is the third, but I'm not counting.
Anyhow, we're continuing our discussion of part four of Obi-Wan Kenobi. And before the break, we talked about Kenobi's connection to the Force. We talked about the mausoleum and the repercussions there. I want to shift gears a little bit and talk about our favorite Alderaanian princess. Let's talk Leia. And let's talk about her encounter with Reva here on the station. Because we see Reva doing everything she can to extract information about the path, this Jedi Underground movement, from Leia. And she does everything from trying to be her friend to trying to intimidate her to my personal favorite, using the Force like we see Anakin do in Clone Wars, using the Force to kind of read her mind. Kylo Ren does it too. Read her mind, and she's standing there, and Leia just kind of looks at her and goes, are we having a staring contest? Right. to eventually leading to torture. And Leia is just kind of standing her ground, you know, and she is just, she's being a kid is literally what she's being, with little comments like, are we having a staring contest? Or asking, getting, drawing people off guard. How did he die? Well, I'll tell you as soon as my dad gets here. He just, little things like that. It was a couple of times I think Reva actually thought she was getting somewhere just to get completely shut down by Leia. And I got to give credit where credit's due, man. That little girl is killing it. I mean, this is a performance that Carrie Fisher would have loved. I could just see Carrie just kind of doing the whole bow down thing to her if they were together. I mean, it's perfect. Yeah. How she's portraying Leia, and she's got the caring side, she's got the smart aleck side, she's got the serious side. She played on her ability as a little kid. I mean, all these little things that she's doing is just stuff that you can see Carrie Fisher doing if it was her. I mean, it's perfect, and it's made this scene so much more interesting, because you know, we kind of discussed this even back when we were discussing Resistance, when they had the torture scenes, not very kid friendly.
Right.
And it's, you know, kids are watching this. What are your thoughts on Leia being interrogated, but basically tortured?
Yeah. You know, I wanted to talk about this because, you know, in the last episode, you know, we see Vader pull the dad and, you know, basically force levitate him out of the window and hold him up there. The guy comes out, the teenager, the young boy comes out, dad, dad. And Vader force pushes him, smashes him against the wall, moves his hand, snaps the kid's neck. Not an adult's neck, a kid's neck, right? And you know, and I was curious, you know, what parents across the country, around the world, are doing, what they're thinking, because, I mean, you know, in Rogue One, you know, we see Vader put the guy up on the ceiling and then slice right through him. And again, I love seeing it. I'm an adult. You're an adult. But I am curious how parents are doing after the last episode and this episode, because, like Aaron was saying, we see this interrogation, which is a scary thing for kids. You know, this isn't an adult being interrogated. This isn't like some grizzled, you know, Marine or military person in any country being interrogated. This is a 10-year-old girl. And then to see her put in that torture chair and about to be electrocuted, what I thought about when I was watching this was, again, back to an episode Aaron and I did when we were covering Rebels, and when our show was called Rebels Reactions. And in it, there is a scene, and Aaron brought this up, and it brought up some controversy within the Star Wars community. Not controversy, but concern, I think. It was when Hera was captured, and she is in the kind of the main Imperial base on Lothal. Governor Price is there, and I'm trying to remember who else is there. But Hera is in a chair very similar to the one we see Leia in. And I don't know if you remember this, Aaron, but they put a needle right into Hera's neck and dropped. And you and I talked about that and how, you know, again, for a kid's show, that was pretty intense. Yeah. And, you know, and rightfully so, I get why some people were concerned about that and the treatment of women and so on. And when I saw this, I thought, man, this, you know, after last episode and this episode, if you're a mom and a dad, you know, are you like, well, okay, I want to see good guys and bad guys, but this is getting a little heavy. And I would say this, Aaron, and again, here's a little bit more of a psychology corner. I'm giving people a psychology corner anyways, Aaron. kind of putting it throughout the episode. See, they're being rewarded for sticking with us, buddy, and listening in.
There we go.
Okay. When we think, buddy, about developmental psychology, and I'm thinking in my mind about Dr. Jean Piaget, famous psychologist who looked at cognitive development. I am thinking about Freud, who looked at development. I'm thinking about Dr. Erik Erikson, who followed Freud at the Vienna Institute. Both Dr. Freud and Dr. Erikson are psychiatrists. And then I'm thinking about all of my developmental psychology professors, the literature I've read. What we know is that, you know, the human brain doesn't develop as fast as we want. I've talked in previous episodes about the development of the brain. Just a quick recap, Aaron will remember this, but just for our listeners, when we're born, when we come out of our mamas, we have that limbic brain. And I'm kind of pointing to my ears right now that with the brain stem, we call it the old brain. We call it the reptilian brain. It's what keeps us breathing. It's the alarm system. It's what creates a lot of anxiety and anxiety disorders, unfortunately. But then the thinking cap comes over, and in the past, that frontal lobe, prefrontal cortex, the most sophisticated part of our brain, finished developing at 18, 19, 20. Again, more recent research has shown over the last 10, 15, 20 years that, unfortunately, for young males and females, that prefrontal cortex is not done developing until maybe 21, 22, 23, 24. Again, parents don't want to hear this. But again, Aaron and I have talked about this before on the show, and it's just kind of, you know, we can talk about different theories on why that is. But why do I bring up prefrontal cortex? Because again, it is the most sophisticated part of our brain. It's the seat of reasoning, problem solving, thinking things through, understanding more sophisticated situations, being able to process, you know, scenes like, you know, torture scenes or, you know, violent scenes that we see in movies, you know, and so on and so forth. But here's the thing, and I've said this, and Aaron knows it's true, is our young kids, you know, I think about anybody under the age of 20, they've all, unfortunately, including my kids, are 18 and 15, they've all been exposed to way more than what Aaron and I were exposed to coming up. And what that leads to, buddy, is dysregulation. They don't have brains to be able to process it. Right, buddy?
Yeah.
And so I just wanted to share that and say that, you know, I just want parents to be alert to it. You know, I don't know what they're going to do with Vader here in the last two episodes. I love seeing Vader be, you know, pretty tough. But it's one thing to see Han in Empire Strikes Back be put in a chair and kind of like, he's like, ah, oh, ah, you know, and then you hear him scream, but I know Han's okay. But to see a 10-year-old girl, not Hera, not Han, but a 10-year-old girl put in a torture chair like that, that's pretty serious stuff. And I'm not sure kids under 10, 11, 12 will really be able to fully process that in a way that I would like to see.
There you go. There you go. Perfect. I will say this. We did get one good piece of information after Hera got tortured.
What was that?
She didn't like Kanan's haircut.
That's right. Thank you for being socially skilled and throwing in some humor, Aaron. Right now.
Yeah, that's what I'm here for.
That's right, buddy. I save you, you save me.
Exactly. Exactly. And in between time, we Carabas.
Carabas.
Carabas. Anyway. But yeah, the whole, a lot of the sequences with Leia.
There's another Carabas.
A lot of these interrogation sequences with Leia are very dark. They're very deep. But I love how they use Leia to break it with humor.
Yes. Yes.
Exactly. And lighten the mood. Because if she would not have lightened the mood, it would have been extremely hard to watch.
Exactly.
but we got her breaking the mood. You know, I mean, I think of when Kylo was trying to probe Rey's brain, or even Poe Dameron's brain. Yeah. And he's probing the brain and finds out where the map is. You know, these are the types. This is, or even Anakin when he was trying to do it to Dooku. And everything. So it's not something we haven't seen before, but then it also brings up an interesting point, especially in that one scene where Reva is trying to probe her brain. Leia's resisting, and not only resisting with ease.
Right. That made me nervous because I thought Reva looked at her and it's kind of like, huh. Got a force sensitive. I'm like, my gosh, you can't fight it off too good. But Leia didn't know that.
No, she don't. And I think that kind of clued her in there for a minute because Leia's literally just sitting there staring at her. And you could see Reva somewhat struggling, mm-hmm. have a somewhat struggle on her face. And all of a sudden you have Leia like, are we having a staring contest?
Yeah, that's...
Well, and then when Reva breaks the connection and kind of steps back, like what? You see Leia almost a slight painful expression on her face just come back, and she kind of droops and comes back up. And so like she was resisting and she could finally breathe a sigh of relief. But
right.
She was, you know, there had to be some thought in Reva's head that I'm dealing with a force sensitive kid, especially after that scene. Because she even steps back and is like, you're strong.
Well, let me add this, buddy. And it would be the second part two, mm-hmm. where they're on Dayu and Haja, right, is pretending to be a Jedi, steps in front of her, and she throws him against the wall and then does the same thing to Haja as she does to Leia, and his face is pained, it's stressed, very different than Leia's. And I just thought about like what you said, when Kylo Ren is doing the same thing, that mind probe to Poe, the way that Oscar Isaac portrays it is it's very painful. Haja shows the same thing, right, with Reva. Yeah. And here's Leia. She does, just like you said, she shows some kind of like, you know, when Reva was done, but nothing like Haja or what, you know, Poe dealt with. So, I mean, there's some, I'm sure Reva's like, Haja, he did not have the force strength of Leia.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
Not at all. And I think that's what makes everything a little bit more concerning at this point, because she's got to have a clue.
Yes.
If she's hunting Kenobi and she's hunting Jedi, she can tell a Force-sensitive kid. There's no way she cannot tell she's dealing with a Force-sensitive kid unless she either and doesn't do anything, unless she blatantly ignores it because she doesn't care. She just wants Kenobi. Or B, Leia so much stronger than Reva is, Reva couldn't recognize it.
Right. Right. No, I agree with you. Yep.
So it'll be interesting to see how this progresses from there, and see what happens. So I'm interested. I can't wait. Yeah. I mean, ultimately at the end of the episode, we see Vader after Ben and Leia escape. As I mentioned in the synopsis, so Vader arrives and he is livid. He comes storming into the meeting room and force lifts Reva up in the air and is just choking her and is literally ready to snap her neck when she admits that she has let them go on purpose and that there's a tracker on them. And she tells Vader that her ultimate goal is to get Kenobi and do it this way so she can also bring down this Jedi underground that's helping Jedi escape. And hopefully in return will help them lead to Jedi that have escaped. So the question is now, is that truly her ultimate goal? And if so, why?
Right. This is, you know, we talk about nitpicks. You know, and I don't know if we should say nitpicking or just, you know, things that you and I see that don't quite, you know, we talk about, you know, Ben's reconnection to the Force. For me, this is my confusion, and maybe the writers are purposely doing this, but like what you and I have talked about, and I put it in, you know, show notes because you and I do them together, mm-hmm. is what is Reva's ultimate goal? Because, you know, is it Kenobi like she tells Vader? You know, she says, you know, she says it in front of the two other Inquisitors, you know, Kenobi's all that matters. Well, if so, why do you let him go? You're saying keep, you know, they're surrounded there. You let him go. Is that true? You know, what, you know, is she wanting Kenobi and the Jedi in the path because she wants revenge on both Vader and the Jedi, right? She probably want, you know, does she want, you know, does she want Kenobi dead and the Jedi because perhaps they left her behind at the Jedi temple? Does she hate Vader because she saw him come in the temple, right, as Anakin? That's what's not clear to me. And I also put in the show notes, why does Vader go with her explanation? Because when she sat there and says, I let them go, but then follows it up with Kenobi's, you know, all that matters, well, okay, if Kenobi's all that matters, then it doesn't matter about the path. We can follow that later. And Vader has clearly said, you know, I don't even care about the Grand Inquisitor. Kenobi's all that matters. And he's right there on the landing platform. Again, whether, you know, the snow speeders, air speeders come in or not, you know, everything's focused on, you know, open fire, kill Kenobi. He's laying there on the deck. You can hand him over to Vader. So there's just some inconsistencies there. Do you feel the same way?
Yeah, I definitely agree. There's what her ultimate goal, what she says her ultimate goal is, doesn't match what the actions being taken are. You know, to say Kenobi's all that matters. All right, you have him right there.
Right there.
He's surrounded by 60 or 70 stormtroopers. You're being flanked by two purge troopers, and you got yourself.
Yeah.
He ain't getting away.
No. I mean, even though those two ships, you got Wade and Sully coming in, mm-hmm. and they're not experienced soldiers. They just said that, you know, earlier in the episode. And yeah, they're firing away and blowing stuff up, but you know, we saw her jumping over the rooftops of Dayu. I mean, like she can jump and run and boom, boom, and they show her doing parkour. It's like, okay, you just showed me her doing parkour. And I could imagine her jumping really fast and getting over to Kenobi. And so mm-hmm. whether Tala dies or Leia dies, well, who cares?
Inconsequential.
Yeah, they get in the snowspeeder and fly away, fine. You do everything to stop Kenobi mm-hmm. from getting off that platform.
Yeah, if he's all that matters,
right?
How did you let him escape?
Right.
And I'm sorry, I still don't understand why Vader accepted the explanation.
Yeah,
because Kenobi's all that matters. She failed. You snap that neck and you move to the next Inquisitor.
Yeah. Yeah, the next two standing right there.
Yeah. You turn to the fifth brother and be like, go get him.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's, again, you know, you and I always give credit to these writers at the very beginning, director, the writers. Sometimes there's two, there's three on the last episode. I know they've read these scripts so many times. And you know Deborah Chow's looking at it. You know that, I would guess, at the end of each episode, it says special thanks to Dave Filoni. At the very, very end tonight, I looked to the very end of the credits, and it said, you know, special thanks to Jon Favreau. You know these people are looking at this. Leland Chee's got to be looking at this, the keeper of the holocron, the story group. But I don't know. I wonder. And now, again, our listeners, you know that Aaron and I, and Aaron in particular, has really talked about redemption within Star Wars. And I just wonder, buddy, if this kind of leaves it open. Like, she doesn't kill Kenobi. She talks a big game here, but maybe ultimately she just wants Vader dead. But not really, you know, maybe she does turn, and for some reason, I don't know. I kind of want her to, because she's deliciously evil. Like I said, at episode one and two, part one, part two, and she's continued to be deliciously evil. I don't really want to see a redemption story for her, but maybe it happens. I don't know.
Redemption story for Reva. Now that is something I have not thought about.
Yeah, buddy.
I'm going to have to give that one some thought, my friend. The only way I see her being redeemed is by turning on Vader and saving Kenobi. And I don't see that happening.
Yeah, I don't either. Unless there's just something that happens, you know, that she sees, hears. Leia says something. Tala says something. Kenobi says something. And she really comes around, and, you know, like, I mean, we were all questioning Kylo. Remember before Rise of Skywalker, is Kylo Ren going to be redeemed? And I think most of us thought, well, probably not. You know, you killed your dad. You ran him through in episode 7, and you're doing all kinds of stuff in episode 8 and slamming Hux against walls and killing people and wanting to kill Luke Skywalker, and okay, he's redeemed in episode 9. It's like, wait, what? Well,
but at the same point, Kylo Ren was also Ben Solo. He was a Skywalker. So that redemption is almost guaranteed.
Okay.
To me, there was no question in my mind of Kylo Ren getting redeemed by the end of that trilogy. It had to have happened. And it happened pretty much how I assumed it would, with him sacrificing himself for Rey. So, you know, that's kind of how I expected it to happen, and that's how it played out. But with Reva, I just don't see anything being set up. I mean, she is, as you said, deliciously evil. I mean, it would make a great redemption story, but I don't feel we've been building to that.
Yeah, and I hear you, and I've said it. I don't want it to be. I just kind of hear little bits and pieces, and we know redemption is part of this stuff, but I don't want it. I don't want to see that. I love how she is as a character.
I mean, the thing is, with Star Wars, with the redemption stories in Star Wars, you see the seeds of redemption being dropped throughout the series with Kenobi, with Vader. It starts being dropped with Luke in Empire Strikes Back. Those seeds are starting to be dropped. Then in Return of the Jedi, the more seeds are dropped till he ultimately is redeemed. In the sequel trilogy, we see the seeds start dropping there at the beginning of the trilogy, in Force Awakens when Han tells him he doesn't have to be this way.
Yeah.
And we see those seeds of redemption starting to be planted there. I mean, he immediately went and killed his dad, but that seed was planted. And then we see it in the second movie in The Last Jedi with the dyad between Rey and Kylo and their conversations. The fight after they kill Kylo, after they kill
Snoke.
Yeah. That fight, they fight together. And you see that them come together as one and take out the Praetorian Guard. Yeah. So the seeds of redemption are there. We haven't had any of that for Reva.
Whatever, Aaron, just because you did a great job there and covered up all your previous Sarabas moments. No, very well said. I love what you're saying. And yes, I consistent with you, they're not there. I hope they don't do it. And I like her being a baddie. She's great.
I mean, at this point, the only thing that is going to save, that there's two ways to redeem Reva at this point. One, she, for some reason, something snaps in her head and she turns on Vader and lets Kenobi escape. The other thing would be if one of those younglings that's with her at the very first scene of part one.
Oh.
Shows back up to help Kenobi.
Oh, yeah.
That would be the only other thing I could see.
I agree with, I like that.
Because the Jedi Master that was with them, I don't know if you noticed it, it may have been, correct me if I'm wrong, because I thought that the Jedi Master that was covering for them as they tried to escape, she was one of the ones on ice underneath the Inquisitor's base.
Maybe that, or I do wonder, remember Roken, played by Ice Cube's son?
Yeah.
Is it Ice Cube's? Yes. O'Shea Jackson Jr.?
Yeah.
He talks about having a wife. I've heard some Star Wars fans think that maybe she was
down there.
Yes. I don't know, but that's a theory. But I like what you're saying about that Jedi Master potentially being down there.
Yeah. I have to go back and rewatch that scene. And
she looks like, yes.
And see what happens. So, but yeah. We'll see, you know, I'll have an answer for you next week. But I part of me wants to say, I just haven't had the time to go back and rewatch. But I'm going to go back and pull up this over the weekend, pull up it part one and watch that Order 66 scene and then go back to the frozen tundra.
Yes. I want to say this, Aaron. I meant to do this between, and I didn't have the time, but to go back and read the Vader series, Charles Soule, that really shows like what we talked about a little bit last week. Is it that artifact that came from the Jedi Temple, Jocasta Nu had it in there. Does it lead, like that moment, I think it's called, lead him to Mustafar to do it? Is the Emperor given permission? Does the Emperor want him there on Mustafar? Because we talked about that a little bit last week, and that also develops, the Emperor introducing the Inquisitorius to Vader. So I want to go back through those just because I loved it anyways, but just to kind of get those answers and convey them to our listeners, unless they've, just recently read them too, but they're really good. And I want to just sit down. I bought the trade paperback of, there was four trade paperbacks of that Vader run. Just incredible. Incredible.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So we got some stuff to follow up on next week, buddy.
That's right.
All right. So, well, I want to close out our talking points tonight with just some of the little Easter eggs that we had through this episode, because there are a lot of nods to other parts of the saga through this episode. Probably the biggest and most recognizable are the speeders at the end. I've been calling them snow speeders, but they're basically that's which is basically what they were, the snow speeders from Empire Strikes Back. Just probably a slightly different model, but same thing. It was fun seeing those. I will say though, I was a little disappointed with them in the fighting scenes. Because to me, and I've actually seen this online a couple other places, that was probably the worst special effects that we've seen in the series. Period. So that was a little disappointing. It's and the, not the whole fight, but the fight where they're swooping in onto the deck when they first get there, and you got that shot from behind as they come flying in, one on each side of the screen, and you're kind of coming up behind them. That just looked really fake compared to some of the other stuff they've done.
I heard a person talking about how COVID really affected a lot of the special effects houses in Hollywood, and particularly, the Book of Boba Fett and Kenobi, whereas Mandalorian season one, even season two, had finished filming and then they had to do post-production and stuff. But once COVID hit, it really affected Boba Fett and this. I agree with you. The speeders, look so much better in Empire than this. Of course, a lot bigger budget, but I do think that might have been the result of COVID and the effect on some of these special effects houses. And again, that's just what I'd heard elsewhere, but maybe that was why. But I agree with you. I agree.
Okay. The next Easter egg, of course, I mentioned earlier in the discussion too, were the Purge Troopers. This is the first time we've seen them live action on screen. They were introduced in the video game Fallen Order. Jedi Fallen Order. Yeah. So it was really cool to see them. I've never played that game, so I've never seen them in action in the game. But I will say, I was kind of hoping we would see them because I knew they existed. I knew they were out there. Being we were dealing with the Inquisitors and everything, and we were going to the Inquisitor race, I kind of had my fingers crossed they might show up, and I wasn't disappointed. They looked awesome. I was happy to see them. But to me, the biggest Easter egg was Tara Sanube.
Yes.
I mean, that's the one that really took me off guard. I was not the face I was expecting to connect to at that point. I'm like, oh, wait. I sat there and had to rewind it, and I was sitting there going, I know that face. I know that face. And I had to think for a minute.
Yeah.
Actually, and I knew it was Clone Wars. I knew it had to be Clone Wars. I actually started pulling out my Clone Wars episode visual guide and started flipping through that and found Tara Sanube. I went, oh, of course. That's it. After he was searching the Coruscant Underground for Ahsoka's stolen lightsaber.
Yes.
So
it was that episode called Lightsaber Lost, I think.
Yes, it was. Very good.
Ah, look at that. I do. I remember Clone Wars, and I really loved his interactions with Ahsoka, and to see him there, it just, oh man, just hit you in the gut.
It did. I mean, and I'm sure if they had more time, they could have gone through and we would have seen more Jedi that we knew. The youngling has me curious. I really want to see if it's in one of the younglings from the beginning, or if it matches up to one of the younglings from that Anakin took out in episode 3.
Right.
Or if it's just another random youngling.
Right. It could be. Yes. Right.
So I'm curious about that also. But those were some excellent nods in the episode, I thought. Some excellent little Easter eggs there for you. So
I'll give you another one.
What's up?
When Tala goes to take care of that Imperial officer who wants to question her, she chokes him out. Deborah Chow did a close-up of the comlink there on the console. That right out of episode four. When C-3PO had to put it down and Luke is yelling for him from the trash compactor and he finally comes back and picks it up, yep. And Tala comes back. Absolute nod to episode four. That was
very so true. Very good. Good catch. Good catch. Yeah. Good catch. Awesome. Any other talking points or anything else you want to discuss before we go into our final thoughts, my friend?
One quick thing.
Sure.
We talked about Rebels reactions. Let me do a shout out to Resistance reactions. As I was watching Tala try to fake out Reva, they have these beautiful shots above them of the sea creatures swimming in the background. And I was looking at them a little bit more the second time I watched it, and it just really took me back to Resistance and my creature corner and
on the Colossus
and seeing, you know, Kaz, right?
Mm-hmm.
Underneath the water and getting in. We saw those sharks, you know, it was futuristic kind of, you know, space sharks and just all the different creatures that they put into that show. And I was just looking out at all the different ones. Even when Obi-Wan was swimming, this one swims by him. I'm like, what is that? It's so cool. And so I just had to do a shout out and for our listeners who've been listening that long. You know, here we are talking about Rebels reactions and Resistance reactions. So I had a very much a creature corner vibe seeing all those underwater creatures. So I thought it was so cool.
Excellent. Awesome. Very good. Yeah. That's one thing about this episode. We've seen a lot of creatures. So yes. Throughout it. And that scene there was no exception. So, all right. Well, we're going to wrap up our discussion, go into our final thoughts now. Of course, before we do, though, we're going to take one last break, and when we come back, we will wrap up the episode with our final thoughts, our grades, and this week's Dad Joke of the Week. Hang on, we'll be right back. We're back, everybody. Welcome back. Aaron and David still here, and we're going into our final thoughts of part four of Obi-Wan Kenobi. You know, as I said earlier, and I've said throughout the other, I've enjoyed the series so far. And to be honest, you know, this probably was not my favorite episode of the series so far. But it was still an awesome episode. It had a lot of greatness in it. A lot of scenes in there that I loved, from when Vader showed up and basically just, you know, is taking Reva to task for her failure, to Leia just kind of sitting there and almost felt like she was toying with Reva. I loved all of that. And then of course, Obi-Wan gets his groove back. And although I did not like how quickly he got it, he did awesome stuff in this episode and you can't deny that. And I loved it. So overall, I love the series. I love the episode. The episode was good. And it still left me wanting for more. And the only other thing I'll say is shame on you. Shame on you. Shame on all of you for turning Lola into a bad droid.
Oh my God. I know. Break our hearts more, right?
But what was it the little dragon from Mulan said? Shame on you. Shame on your house. Shame on your cows. Shame on everything.
Just shame on everything.
Oh my gosh. All right. Go ahead, David. What were your final thoughts? What are your final thoughts on part four, Kenobi?
Yeah. Yeah. As with the first three parts, I really enjoyed this episode. You know, I do listen to other podcasts. You know, I'm a big podcast fan, you know, and still bummed that Aaron and I weren't at the podcast meetup out in Anaheim. Oh, my gosh. I wish I could have been there with Aaron. But I do listen to other podcasts. And, you know, I was listening to this one and they brought up a legitimate gripe, a criticism. And I honestly hadn't thought about it because, again, I'm in suspension of disbelief and just enjoying the episode. And they brought up, you know, their problem with it was this is a repeat of part three, meaning we're rescuing Leia again. We just did that in part three we're doing it in part four again. We only have six episodes. Are we? Why are we wasting an episode on a rescue of Leia again? And then I have to admit, it briefly led to me like, oh man, maybe I don't enjoy this episode as much. And then I'm like, wait, no. I just pushed that away and I said, no, I went back to my original feeling. I enjoyed this episode. I love Ewan McGregor as Obi-Wan. We're getting new Star Wars. Him using the lightsaber more. Him deflecting laser bolts and hitting like stormtroopers all day, man. I love it. Kicking Empire butt. I enjoyed the rescue. Like Aaron said, the snow speeders, the air speeders come in. The sound, hearing the sound right from Empire Strikes Back before we even saw him. I loved hearing that. Vivian's performance as Leia, like Aaron and I have talked about, totally building the characterization of Leia, consistent with it. I'm loving this character, Tala, and her help of Obi-Wan and Leia. The sacrifice of Wade, you know, always sacrifice, you know, you think about these things and what, you know, military men and women have done for America over the years and their sacrifice. And when you see people sacrifice for a greater good and for other people's lives, particularly seeing Leia holding Obi-Wan's hand, it really, for me, locked in that's, you know, someone lost their life and you have people alive on that ship, you know, and they're fortunate. And I'd say this, like Aaron said, you know, am I sitting here asking, you know, oh yes, I want more. No, I'm fine. No, I can't wait for next week. And like Aaron said, when they showed Lola, then I'm like, oh man. So yeah, I'm ready. Let's go next week. Part five.
Bring it. Right, that's buddy. Right. Bring it. So of course we want to, I was about to say we're about to go into our media stuff, but I forgot we still need to grade the episodes. We do grading every episode we review, just like if we were in school giving it a grade, A, B, C, D, and or F. For me, all things considered, based on everything I've said, and don't need to repeat it again because I'll probably create another Carabas moment, I'm going to go with an A- on this particular episode. How about you, David?
Yeah, I went with an A. I was going back and forth between A and A-, but I think for me, watching it a second time, as well as talking to you about all these points, particularly our talking points, really helped me to really go with an A instead of an A-, and I just really enjoyed it. So, A.
Very good. Very good. A and an A- for me. So, of course, we want to hear what you think of Kenobi Part 4 and of the whole entire series so far. Of course, don't hesitate to hit us up on any of our social media. We are on Facebook, Instagram, and Pinterest at SW Reactions. We are on Twitter at SW Reactions Pod. Hit us up there, or you can email us show@StarWarsReactions. Let us know what you think of Kenobi and of the show and of how the story's going so far. We'd love to hear from you. David, if somebody wants to talk Star Wars with you, my friend, how would they go about doing that?
Yeah, the best way is Twitter. Mine is @David_Modders, MODDERS. I know a lot of people, I think, are leaving Twitter, but I don't know. I've always enjoyed talking Star Wars on there, and hit me up. The other one is Instagram. It's just simply my name, David Modders. You can check that out. And the other one is email. If you want to do a longer form kind of conversation, and that is David@StarWarsReactions.com.
Very good. Very good. And of course, the best way to talk Star Wars with me is on Twitter at TA Harris 1210 79, or of course you can email me anytime, any day, anywhere, and the email address is Aaron@StarWarsReactions.com. Well, with that, David, that brings us to everyone's favorite part of the show.
Favorite part of the show.
I got some good feedback on last week's joke, by the way. Everybody loved that.
No, it was good. It was so appropriate. So good.
Well, this one's not that good.
Okay, well, back to normal then. Okay.
We're back to normal this week. But this one, it is time for our Star Wars dad joke of the week. Can't close the show without it. So here we go. What was Obi-Wan Kenobi's favorite place to hang out when he was young?
All right. I don't know. What was Obi-Wan Kenobi's favorite place to hang out when he was young?
The mall.
Oh, no. The mall. Yeah. Okay.
His favorite, he always went straight to center court.
You know what I just want to say?
Just cut right through the middle. What's up?
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. Every one of these is a Carabas moment, okay? So that's five total for this, including the dad joke of the week. You love it, don't you? You love it. Yeah,
well, at least the food didn't taste like the sewer.
Oh, my gosh. How many parts are this for this joke, man?
I don't know. I'm just making them up as we go.
Oh, gosh. I apologize to our listeners. Please don't leave us.
I bet he was super sad when Qui-Gon.
Oh, God. Oh, God, help me. Are really just full of it tonight, aren't you?
Apparently I am. I am. Maybe not. Maybe I need to get cut in half and let some of it out.
Oh, my gosh.
I better stop. Chopper staring at me.
All right.
He may go murder droid on me.
Oh, my gosh. All right.
All right, my friend. David, this was fun as always, buddy.
Oh, yeah. This is fun time. I hope everybody enjoyed it. And just thanks to everyone for listening.
We appreciate each and every one of you listening in. Y'all are the best. Thank you so much for sticking around with us. We appreciate you. We love y'all. Y'all are the best. We are praying and for the best for each and every one of you. And we are... hope you are well. Make sure you are nice to everybody. Be kind. Love each other. Remember, this is your place for elegant discussion for a more civilized age.
If you'd like to share your thoughts, you can email us at show@StarWarsReactions.com. For our show notes and the latest news from the Star Wars universe, visit our website at www.StarWarsReactions.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at SWReactionsPod or on Facebook at Star Wars Reactions. If you enjoy our show, please leave a review on iTunes. This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or by Lucasfilm Limited. It's intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.StarWars.com. Star Wars. All names, sounds, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and the respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Star Wars Reactions unless otherwise indicated. Star Wars Reactions. Elegant discussion for a more civilized age.